हरे चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
Okay, so do we finish this footnote?
Yes.
Okay, so we're on Prayojana. Prayojana. Like all other systems of Indian philosophy, the Nyaya system maintains that the ultimate goal of human life is to attain liberation. By liberation is meant absolute freedom from all pain and misery. This implies a state in which the soul is completely released from all bondage and from its connection with the body. It is impossible for the soul to attain the state of complete freedom from pain and misery unless the soul is totally disconnected from the body and senses. In liberation, the soul is unconditionally and absolutely freed from all shackles forever. It is wrong to conclude, however, that the state of liberation is the state of happiness. For according to Nyaya, there is no happiness without pain, as there is no light without shade. Therefore, liberation in Nyaya is only release from pain and not pleasure or happiness. Some later Nyayakas, however, hold that liberation is the soul's final deliverance from pain and attainment of eternal bliss. Yes.
It says that unless the soul is totally disconnected from the body and senses.
Because, see, it's by engaging the senses, that's where your difficulties are coming up. That's the problem.
But from the Vaishnava point of view, we're not disconnected. We're just engaging it in Krishna service, no?
Yes. No, this is just what Nyaya says.
Okay.
So in other words, Nyaya, all these other systems, they're a system of liberation. Does that make sense? So in other words, they're all looking at liberation, but it's just how you're going to get it.
Yes.
What's the path you're going to use, or what does it look like?
And the definition of liberation, maybe?
Yes, because the point is that anything other than this is not, I mean, other than Vaishnava liberation, that's the only permanent.
Yeah.
Everything else is temporary, right? Because you'd be liberated, but because there's no activity or engagement of the soul being natural, being engaged by nature, because the Brahman is only Sat. So then Chit, what will Chit do in Sat? Right? It has to do something, be busy. So there's the point of having knowledge of this. So knowledge means to be able to discriminate or see what's the difference, or, you know, these things. So that is not addressed because they're not looking at that element. So then they don't understand the soul can't stay there for very long. Then the soul comes back to the material world. That's why we don't consider it to be eternal. They'll say forever, but it's not actually. So you know, it can't be by definition.
So we can say that all other types of liberation are dependent on some kind of circumstance, whereas Vaishnava is independent of any circumstance.
Yes, you could say, but at the same time as... it's dependent upon being in a relationship with the Lord, like that, because the soul is dependent.
Mm-hmm.
So the element of dependence isn't the problem. It's what you're dependent on. So if you're dependent upon spiritual, then everything works in that function, then it's good. But if your dependence is on the material, then they'll be suffering. So they don't know about the spiritual activities. Mm. So that's why they only go up to this level. And so you can free yourself from that by not identifying with it.
Yeah.
Right? So that by doing Naishkarmya or through knowledge or these different systems, they have ways in which they can elevate themselves to this. But unfortunately, they're all very difficult and the result is temporary. Mm. So, you know, it's a lot of work and not getting a whole lot out of it. So it's sad, but it's the way it is.
So Maharaj, here it is explained that the Nyaya philosophy does not give happiness. They're not looking for happiness.
No, they're looking for getting rid of pain.
Yes.
You know, because you can just sit there pleasantly, and it's not that you're happy, but there's no pain, so it's okay. So they're kind of looking at a pleasant. You know, later they're looking on, you know, that bliss of eternity, you know, like that kind of a thing. But the point is what they don't catch is Nyaya is pointing out is that happiness is simply removing the pain.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so if you remove the pain, then that's that point is there. That you could say is a form of happiness, but this being able to experience happiness is only because there's pain.
Yes.
Right? So if you get rid of pain, then there'll not be any happiness either. It'll just be just a pleasant, neutral state.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So Maharaj, this is the level of Brahman.
Yes, it's Brahman. Yeah.
So this Nyaya philosophy, it can be a basis for everyone who wants to have Brahman realization.
Means it is, but there are higher ones. Like Vaisheshika, as is pointed out here, is that all the Indian systems, that the ultimate goal of life is to attain liberation. So they all are. It's just Nyaya is one of the ways to do it. You know, Patanjali, by yoga you can do it. By Shankha you can do it. Does that make sense? By Vedanta you can do it. So all these different ways are how you can do it. The difficulty is that it only goes up to this level and stops.
Yes.
You know, that's the weakness. Is that right?
But in this Nyaya, they don't say that everything is Brahman. There are eternal atoms of mind.
But they're not worried about it.
Yeah.
Their point is just get out. It doesn't matter what happens in the material world. It happens if you get out of it. Just like, let's say, you're in a place, you go to a city, and it's completely insane. So you don't care what happens to the city after you leave it. You just want to get out of it. You know? If they want to continue being insane, what do you care?
But where they will be situated, they are not talking about where they will be situated after that or anything like that.
No, it doesn't seem to be so much.
That's just weird. What if the place they're going is just as insane?
But, you know, if it means the material world is interacting with the material is the cause of all this insanity. So if you get out of the material world, then you will not, their ideas, you won't have any problem. You know what I'm saying? Let us say, okay, well, let's say this. You are, you do good work, okay?
Thank you.
Then having done good work, then you will be elevated to, you will be rewarded with that by good facilities in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So then the idea is you'll be freed from all the material suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But the problem, what they don't deal with is that everybody will be there and they've all done good work.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this whole place full of all these people who have done good work. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you're being a good guy here and that, but now in here there's a status.
Mm-hmm.
Now what about there?
Status.
Yeah, so then there's going to be somebody who's done more good work than you and he has more facility than you and this and that. So, you know what I'm saying? So but people don't look that far. Because if they looked that far, they would take up the Vedanta philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it sounds good, that's good enough.
Yes, that's just... Yes.
You know, that's the whole point. So it's just your particular modes of nature, then you take up these different philosophies. Because otherwise you go like that. Hey, wait a minute. So, but what if, what's that place?
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? But the point is that you're beyond time and place, so then they don't worry about it, because there is no place. There's no. It just sounds great, you know, but it's not, if you really analyze it, it's not so good. Okay, so now Vaisheshika.
All right. Can you say that actually philosophers, because you don't analyze them deeply?
No, they're it means if you're taking it that real philosophy is only Vaishnavism, then yes. But if you're going to say that, because who does analyze it? You know what I'm saying? That's the point, is who does analyze it other than the Vaishnava philosophy?
Nobody.
Why would they stop? I mean, they become satisfied with just removal of pain?
That's all there is in the material world. Means, why do you stop eating? Because hunger is not there anymore. If you were still hungry, you keep eating. So when hunger stops, is when you stop eating.
But you still think about the menu for tomorrow. You know, you think about.
That's how to get rid of the hunger tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? Because even you have the menu, but then that is the. By making the menu, you get rid of the, you know, that anxiety or need for. You know, knowing what kind of things could be eaten, that the unknown, you remove the unknown. You understand? So the material is defined as removal of pain. Right? You're tired, so then you sleep because of the need for sleep. Does that make sense?
But they don't make the correlation that after you slept enough, you want to do something?
No, but then because by doing something, then it'll cause you more trouble. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So the point is activities give trouble. And so you're simply trying to, you just go on this endless cycle of trying to remove the trouble. Because that's what material life is. You know, there's the anxiety for security. So therefore, one works, one gets a house, one gets money. One situates oneself politically, one has family, one has friends, one has so many plans. But that's just to get rid of the problem of security. But to do that, that's so much anxiety. So if you get rid of the material endeavor, you get rid of the material problem. You know what I'm saying? That's what people are doing anyway, but by being involved in the material, so they're getting the problem that comes from it. So their idea is simply remove involvement in it, you'll be happy. You know what I'm saying? So we're looking at them that they're not thinking so much, which on one level they're, you know, very analytical, but on another level they don't take it very far. But at the same time, is they're taking it way farther than anybody absorbed in material life. You understand? So for someone in material life, these guys are philosophers. You know what I'm saying? But as far as Vaishnavas are concerned, it's not actually a very developed philosophy. Does that make sense? Yeah. No?
Yes.
Yes. The problem is what we're studying here is these are the ways that the various modes of nature establish how someone will look at things. Right. In other words, they're under the control of the modes of nature. So this is one of six ways they can look at it in material consciousness. Right. So these are the ones that are have a faith in the Veda, have faith in the Supreme. Right. Then for those outside this, they'll still use these six, but in various combinations, they're only different parts from here and there. And that way, then you get, you know, more than 20. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So far in Nyaya, we haven't explored any concepts like heaven or hell. Do Nyayakas acknowledge subtle levels of pleasure?
That means, because the Veda says there's the heavenly planets and all that, so that they'll accept as there. Uh-huh. But their idea is that that's still going to be a problem, because for them that will be temporary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? So therefore, if you get rid of all the material endeavor, mm-hmm. then that supposedly will make you happy.
Mm. Enjoy it?
That's the way they look at it.
And what they're going to do then?
Means it's not a matter of doing, it's kind of like just being in a neutral state, because there is no interaction, there is no analyzation, there's just existence. Does that make sense? I mean, it doesn't make sense, but it doesn't make sense. No, but this is what the Mayavad philosophy is. Yeah. This is what your Buddhism is. This is what all these are. It's impersonal. It means you have personal and you have impersonal. So personal, that's the Vaishnavism. Everything else is some form of this. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I mean, think about it. They're working very hard. They're having wars. They're dying about, you know, them, serving God, you know, and going to heaven. But once you get to heaven, what are you going to do? You know? But, okay, but enjoy, but what does that look like? Okay, the JWs talk about, you know, nice, cuddly, talking animals that your kids can play with. Okay, that's the kids. What do you do?
Yeah.
You know, like that, you know. I mean, the Muslims talk about, you know, nice, green, embroidered couches. Or, you know what I'm saying? So, okay, but then that's it.
Study.
Huh?
Some people will study, that's what they say.
They say they'll study. But you can study here, so why go all the way there?
Whatever you will do, study here, you'll have more brain.
Okay, but then once you finish the study?
Eat whales.
Okay. Who's going to catch the whales? And they'll import a few goys to do that.
That's as much as we went to in the discussion.
Okay. Whales. Why whales?
Because they cannot eat them now. No kosher.
Oh. Whales aren't kosher. Why not? They don't have an exoskeleton. They'll eat whales. So that means then they could also eat lobsters and crabs and...
All those. That's it.
So all the things you can't do here, you'll be able to do there.
Oh, it looks like hell, but...
So now the point is they're not thinking, right? So that's the point, is that the modes of nature cloud one, that one only thinks up to a certain level and stops. You know what I'm saying? That's just how the modes work. You know, you think, if I get money, now I have no money and I'm suffering. So if I have money, I'll be happy. Mm-hmm. But the person has money, but he's still suffering, because before it's like, you know, you don't have anything for anyone to steal. Now you have something for anyone to steal. Before, if you had a friend, you knew they were a friend. Now you have money. You don't know if they're actually a friend or just because you have money. You know what I'm saying? So the point is everyone suffers, but they don't notice that, how you say, their position, what means what they don't have, they'll think. But that person, let's say, he's living in a small place and, you know, it's a rough neighborhood, but at least he has a place. There are people out on the street who have nothing. Mm-hmm. So he's taking his position, and they're thinking, if I was just inside, you know, a place like those guys, then I'd be happy. But they're there and they're thinking, oh, if we were just uptown, then I'd be happy. Mm-hmm. And the guy's uptown thinking, you know, if we were up a few more floors, we'd be happy.
Or the Hamptons. Or the Hamptons.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, or, you know, why are we in this city? We should be in another city, you know. Or then some are thinking, yes, we'll buy land on the moon, you know, something. You know, so it's the point is the modes of nature trick you that whatever position you're in, then you'll say it's not good. Right? And then some other position is better, but someone else in that same position that you say is better says it's not good. So that means none of the positions are good. It's just that the illusion is that one of them will be good. But none of them are, so people don't think that much.
So that technically all of these are Maya Pratyaya? Or do
you? Yeah, I mean, they may have faith in God or this or that, but it's... Mayaya Pratyagyanas, it means there is that element, but it's more that, you know, my intelligence, I'll work out everything, yeah. I'm in control. Yeah. So the point is that what the value is it regulates them.
Mm.
Yes. You know, there's a process, there's knowledge, there's elevating oneself, all these different things. There's all kinds of positive elements. So that's what all these different things have in common. They have some useful element, but it's only actually useful if it's applied within the Vaishnav context. Is that?
For Nyaya philosophy, Gautama wrote some books.
Yeah, the Nyaya Sutras.
Nyaya Sutra is the main the book.
Double.
And this was when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was studying and teaching Nyaya. So he was teaching according to this Nyaya.
Means you're teaching according to the sutras in that how logic works. Like when we're going through and analyzing how everything works, when we're dealing with all the sambandha and all that. That's common. Everybody studies that. Yes. Now, using that as your process to elevate yourself and therefore getting your ultimate goal, that's where it turns into a philosophy that no one else worries about.
Yes.
Right? The Nyayas use it like that. Mm-hmm. But everybody uses Nyaya.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
But if I remember well, Ms. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, before initiation was...
But it's the same thing as nitya kriya. There's nyaya as meaning logic, and there's nyaya as a philosophy. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's the difference. Let's say you have cooking, and there's one person gets into cooking and analyzes it down to everything and how you do everything like that. And so, as far as cooking goes, this is the, full discussion on cooking, okay? But it's cooking. But now, this person also happens to think that this is how you'll elevate yourself. So if you cook without the attachment and this and that, you'll free yourself from material entanglement, and this way you'll attain to, transcendence. You understand? So... everybody else will use his book as a cookbook, and only a few people, will use it as their method of self-realization. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's what's happening. So Nyaya is one of the 14 books of Vedic knowledge, and that logic is necessary to analyze philosophy and apply it in your life. And only those who follow in Gotama's line and see it as a philosophy, use it as mimamsa.
Mimamsa
means it's one of the 14 books. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So for everybody else, it's just logic. For him, it's philosophy. You know what I'm saying? Just like devotees, do they do yoga? Right? They stand on their head and push their nose and do all kinds of funny things. Right?
They may.
You've never heard of any devotees doing yoga asanas.
Yes.
Yeah, it means there's tons of them. Mm-hmm. Right? But is it their philosophy of elevation, of self-realization?
No.
All it is for them is a method of health. You understand? So in the same way as Gotama... logic, Nyaya, is just a system of logic. But some take it as a path of self-realization. Does that make sense? Yeah? Like that. So that's the difference. But it presents things very nicely, so it has lots of nice tools for using in self-realization. But his philosophy we don't use. We use his logic. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Vaisheshika. Vedic atomic theory. The founder of Vaisheshika philosophy is the sage Kanada. Some say he was named Kanada because he led a life of an ascetic and subsisted on grains of corn gleaned from the field. It's not so much grains of corn, it's just grains.
Kanada means grains?
I'm not sure. Or maybe corn. See, because the difficulty is, much of the time, at least these early translators, they translated grain as corn. So it may have been a general thing that just in those days corn meant grain, because it can be rice, it could be wheat, it could be anything, it could be corn also. But so many times it's thought corn means actually corn, you know, the yellow stuff that the Indians eat and jazz like that. Does that make sense?
In Danish, grains actually is called corn.
It's called corn.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe they were Danes or something that did all the translation.
That's where the Aryans came from.
Hmm? The Aryans. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, there's some connection. There's some connection.
In Canada, we grow a lot of wheat. Lots of wheat grown.
Canada.
Wheat grown. Yeah. But is it called corn?
It's called maize.
Called maize.
Oh,
maize.
Okay.
Okay, so when you say when you're subsisting, that's ruta. It means the people harvest their grains, and then you go into the field, and what's left on the field, you pick that up and take that home. That's called ruta. He who was also known as Uluka. He who is also known. Okay.
He who was also known as Uluka.
So the system is sometimes called Alukya. Kanada wrote the first systematic work of this philosophy, Vaisheshika Sutra. This work is divided into 10 cantos, each canto containing two sections. Prasastapada wrote a commentary on this sutra entitled Svarta Dharma Samgraha. That is so famous that it is called Bhashya, which means simply commentary. In Indian philosophical discourse, whenever the word Bhashya is used by itself without further specification, it is understood to refer to this commentary. Two well-known explications of Prasastapada's work are Udyayana Kiranabali and Sridhar's Nyaya Kandali. The significant feature of this system is the introduction of a special category of reality called uniqueness, Vishesha. Thus this system is called Vaisheshika. Okay, so in other words, they've added something, this uniqueness.
Who's
Prasastapada?
Some sage?
I guess it's somebody who came later who wrote a commentary on Vaisheshika Sutra. Yeah, well, I mean, within these lines it is, within the philosophy it is. So then, you know, it's like the Sandarbhas. You know, you just have to say the Sandarbhas. You don't have to say the Sat Sandarbhas. Like that. It's just they become well known within the philosophical circles. So, okay, so now we'll have to watch out for this uniqueness, because that's what makes it. Makes the philosophy unique, yeah. So that's why it's a song. So it appears it is Nyaya with the addition of some uniqueness. So that's why they call it Nyaya Vaisheshika. Sambandha. The concepts of God, the material nature, and the individual soul. Vaisheshika holds to the atomic theory of existence. Right? Means Nyaya mentioned it. Everybody mentions it. But they don't make it into a major thing. So it appears he makes it more major. Right? Like that. According to which the entire universe is composed of eternal atoms. Right? Because we're taking is that the earth atom is eternal. But now the combination of the earth atom into something, like a rock or a chair, that's temporary. Right? So it'll go back to that earth element, but those are eternal, right? Because that's what the material nature is. Pradhan means it's made up of these 24 different atoms, right? And so those atoms, those are eternally present, because the material energy is eternally present, right? But its manifestation where the earth atoms are separated from all the other atoms, and then they're combined together to make various forms, that only happens at the time of creation. No? Yeah. So does that make sense?
Yes. So is earth the only atomic substance?
Or no. It means water, no, fire.
Fire atom?
Air atom? You have all those atoms.
Yeah.
Yeah, mind atom.
And those can't be broken down into any...
No. That's as small as it gets. So this idea that you take an atom, split it, and then you get an explosion, that means they're splitting something bigger than an atom.
But how is that consistent with, in modern science, when they say water is H2O, you know, two hydrogens with one oxygen?
That's the form that it's taking, I guess. Uh-huh. You know, just like the chair. It's just that they'll say it's all this and that, because they don't actually understand what an atom is. So then you're combining things together, and then getting something. Mm. So these elements then must be combinations of something. Mm. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something different.
Well, this is what they keep figuring out. Even, I mean, every time they say they found the smallest, they find out that it's made of smaller items. So.
Until they get down and they find that there's a whole group of people there and there's a mayor there. And you know, it's a whole... And the one who figured this out was an elephant.
Bucket of Hala.
Huh?
Bucket of Hala.
Yeah. But at the same time, Vaisheshika does not ignore the moral and spiritual laws that govern the process of union and separation of atoms. Right? So atoms are there, but there are moral and spiritual laws that deal with how they're combined and how they're taken apart. So you have to deal according to that. In this way, the atomic theory of Vaisheshika is different from the atomic theory of modern science. Modern science's theory proposes a materialistic philosophy, explains the laws of the universe as mechanical, as being the result of the motions of atoms in infinite time, space, and direction. According to this view, the operation of atoms is governed by mechanical laws. But according to Vaisheshika, the function of atoms is guided or directed by the creative or destructive will of the Supreme Being. Right, so this is this is where, when we say it's mechanistic, and we're saying that that's not good, that's because we're meaning mechanistic means it's saying that the nature itself has somehow or another created its own laws. Right? Not that there's no higher being that's establishing the laws. So therefore it's mechanistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that sometimes comes up as a discussion that somebody's putting something together, but then it's mechanistic.
Mm.
Like that. The only one I ever heard complain about someone's presentation was mechanistic, though, was the author of this particular work we're looking at now. Because most don't understand. You know, there's the mechanics of something, but here this point of being mechanistic means the material nature itself creates its own thing. But along with that, they also will say is that material nature has created consciousness. It's just a particular situation in which then consciousness can arise.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the material nature is producing consciousness, it's producing the soul, you know, it's producing its own laws, and so it functions separately on its own.
And yet we have free will.
Yes. And it's all by chance.
Super.
Right? Now there's something that doesn't make any sense, right? And these people get awards for their stupidity. Right? He's come up with the most attractive, well-documented, nonsense, yes. You know, like you have the Razzie Awards. I wonder if they could do something like that in science.
That would actually be
the
personal problem.
Right? Moral and spiritual laws that govern the process of union and separation of atoms.
Yes. Now, you want to know what happened to Eve. How,
I don't understand the atom and the moral and spiritual laws regarding to the atom.
Okay. So, what we're doing here is... See, when we're dealing with earth, water, fire, air, and ether, you know, we're generally, means it can refer to either the atoms are made of or the manifestations of them. So generally we take it as the we'll take earth as just, you know, that the dirt out there. And then you can do something with the dirt. But still, that is a combination of earth and atoms and other atoms that makes that manifestation. Does that make sense? So, you understand? So there's laws that govern how that'll be put together. So then, because it's there, then there are social laws that you must follow. Right? In other words, he's not understanding that, but he's basically alluding to that there's naimittic laws and nitya laws. So there's spiritual laws that govern the nature of the soul and how it functions and how it can free itself from the entanglement of the world. And there are social laws, that means you're here with others, so you have to act in a certain way so that you don't disturb them. And they're, you know, doing whatever they're doing and they don't disturb you. So the spiritual and moral laws are established by God. That's Vaisheshika's part. Right? Nyaya just, you know, basically acknowledges that something's there, but he doesn't get so much into it. Here he's saying that these laws are established by the Lord.
So it doesn't mean that it refers to the small atom. It means that all those laws, they exist and established by God.
Yes, but it governs how those atoms will therefore be put together into something. You know, it's just like you have pradan, which is just the material energy undifferentiated. That means all the variety of atoms are just mixed. So it's just an homogenous, you know, how you say, just darkness of ignorance. Right? Does that make sense? So then when the Lord glances at the pradan, so then false ego and time, right? So false ego is the catalyst, but time is the activity in which it can be accomplished. So when those go into the material energy, then all the atoms separate. So then you have all the earth atoms, all the fire, all the water, all the air, the mind, the intelligence, like that. Does that make sense? Then Krishna gives the blueprint of how these will be combined together into all the forms of life and all the situations of life and all the activities that can be done. Does that make sense? So those are the laws then governing the atoms. Right? Does that make sense? So the situation that's here now on this planet, they're put together in this way because this is the mentality, the modes, the mentality, the karma of the people here. So they end up with things like this, right? You go to heavenly planets, you got trees that are 600 feet tall, you know, big trees, you know. We're thinking the sequoias are big, you know, these guys are big, you know. So, you know, all these different things that are there because the modes that they're under are different, so the atoms are put together differently. But they're all put together according to the laws of God. You know what I'm saying? So for us, because it's the laws of God, it's a matter of then what I'm dealing with here, I should be seeing that in relationship to the Lord. As before, as Vaishnava Das was saying about the quota, right? One's quota. So everything here belongs to God. We have our quota that we deal with to maintain ourselves so that we can serve the Lord. So we're not so worried about that, okay, I'm engaging my car in Krishna's service, but it's actually made out of just atoms. You know what I'm saying? That's important if I'm attached to the car, so therefore, if it's just atoms, it's not really this car, then it can break that down. So it's a technique to do that. But the problem is they don't have the positive, that it's there to develop love for God. Does that make sense?
And they also accept the theory of creation that we accept, Lord Brahma and all that stuff?
I would expect, because that's what the Puranas describe. But the point is they're trying to, because that's just on your day-to-day things, but they're trying to get beyond the material world. So for that, then they have a system how to get beyond. Mm-hmm. So it's, in other words, if you take everything, put it back into atoms, and therefore have attachment to nothing, then you can free yourself from the material entanglement and get liberated. So they end up in the same position as the Nyayas or the Buddhists or the, you know, anybody. You know, all they all have these way that they take some aspect, focus on that, free themselves from the material end, but they end up all in the same place. Right? You know, so the Buddhist and the Mayavadi are fighting like cats and dogs, right? But when they free themselves, they'll be in the, both in the same place.
How what?
Yeah.
You.
Maybe because of that, they will go back to some
unrealistic
work because they don't want to
see. Yeah,
this prama is not big enough for the both of us.
Yeah, yeah. But it's unlimited. So what? I'm out of here. Okay. Okay. Okay, so the will of the Supreme is directing this because it's His laws. It's not the, we say the laws of nature, but it's God's laws that are applied to nature. Right? Mm. Does that make sense? Mm. You say the state laws, but it's not that, you know, that the, on the map or whatever it is, it's the big letters across the map, they produced it. It's in, you know, it's produced by the leadership there. So the Lord creates this according to His will. So it's the laws governing nature. That's why they call it the laws of nature. Vaisheshika states that the universe has two aspects, one eternal and one non-eternal. The eternal consists of the universe, the eternal constituents of the universe are the four kinds of atoms, earth, water, fire, and air. And the five substances, space, time, direction, mind, and self. These are not subject to change, and they can be neither created nor destroyed. Another part of the universe is non-eternal, that is, subject to creation and destruction in a particular time and spaces. In the beginning of creation, two atoms are united into a jyad, which is non-eternal because it can be divided again into two. The jyads and atoms cannot be perceived but are known through inference. The combination of three jyads is called a triad.
I think it's dyad and triad. I don't think it's the Sanskrit word.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Oh, okay. It's okay. Yeah. Dyad and triad.
Yeah.
And so then.
That's the
word. So now if the dyads are the kind of the oriental, then what's the. I mean, the triad. What's the dyad?
It just means two.
Two. Yeah. So then the triad is three. But the triad is made out of three dyads.
Three dyads.
Okay. Yeah, no, I get that, but I don't understand the connection. Means if this is the triad, the oriental one, what is the dyad? What's their ethnic origin? Because the triad's made out of this, but then yeah, okay. Triyanuka, or Trasharenu, which is the smallest perceptible object. Okay, so that means you have two atoms, it's a dyad. Okay, and then three dyads. So six atoms together is the smallest perceptible object. Okay, that's footnote six. This is confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam 3.15. The division of gross time is calculated as follows. Two atoms make one double atom, and three double atoms make one hexatom. Hexatom, right? This hexatom is visible in the sunshine, which enters through the holes in a window screen. One can clearly see that the hexatom goes up towards the sky. Okay. It is from these triads that other larger compounds develop. Yeah, that's what I was saying. Then they kind of take over a city, right?
He's saying that two atoms make a dyad, but which kind of atoms? He says there's four kinds.
It could be of any of them.
Earth hexatom or water hexatom.
Doesn't matter. They all float around. Okay, it is from these triads that other larger compounds develop. Thus, the common elements comprised of eternal atoms are non-eternal because they can be broken down into smaller units. Right, so they'll go back. So they're actually combinations of those things. So they're seeing some bigger combination and then saying that this is hydrogen, this is oxygen. But those are all combinations anyway of various atoms.
Mm-hmm.
So that particular combination, just like the modes in nature, you make a particular combination that comes out a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
So that way then they get all the things. So their elemental charts, thinking that's the smallest, no, those are the ones that they can perceive. Right? But now, what six atoms it's made of, so that therefore you get what they're not aware of.
Mm.
Right? So that gives an indication, so they're able to perceive the atom. But then what they're actually looking for is 1/6 the size of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doesn't mean by necessarily in proportion, but because there must be some space between them and everything.
Mm-hmm.
The entire universe is a systematic arrangement of physical things. So here it's not a matter of the importance of the mechanistic aspect of how it's working or the mechanical aspect, right? It's that it goes down into atoms. So whatever size they are, this and that, all they're trying to point out is that these atoms, they combine together in dyads, and that becomes those three of those into triads. And then everything is made out of that. But so that means everything that you're able to perceive and see, it can be again broken back down and go back into the atoms. So everything is temporary. Right? In other words, the atoms and that, those are eternal, but what is manifest from the atoms, that's temporary. Right? Does that make sense? Because in other words, this philosophy is working on breaking down the material energy where there's nothing left so that you become freed from entanglement.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're attached to the combinations of the atoms. But once it's taken apart, where's the attachment?
Mm.
So it's similar to the philosophy, actually. If we have any attachments here, if we just break it apart into the parts...
Yeah, then it starts... Yeah. It means that's why... It mentions the body made of three elements,
yeah.
Right? Because the body seems great when they say it's mucus, bile, and air. It suddenly loses some of its, you know, it doesn't quite have the same, you know, inspirational.
Mystique.
Yeah, the mystique kind of goes away. You know, and that's the nice one. You know, when I say, you know, how you say stool, urine, you know, bones all in a bag of skin. You know, then it even gets even more less attractive. Okay. The entire universe is a systematic, you understand? So we're just that much because the focus is on developing relationship with Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have the relationship with Krishna, mm-hmm. so they take that to more extreme, down to the atoms. Right? The entire universe is a systematic arrangement of physical things and living beings that interact with one another in time, space, and direction. Footnote 7.
Means they have to work very much on the intelligence to be able to apply.
Yeah, no, all of these, it's all intelligence. Except it means you have to be intelligent to follow karma mimamsa. But in karma mimamsa, then there's more the element of six. Of that just piety, you know, just being pious and all. So here then, these others generally take a lot of intelligence. So that would be, I guess, why they would call them philosophers. Because that's the main element that they use. Okay, this is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 1320. Bhagavad Gita 1327. O chief of the Bharatas, know that whatever you see in existence, both the moving and the non-moving, is only a combination of the field of activities and the knower of the field. Right? So the field of activities is the material elements. So it's a combination of those and the knower of the field, the soul. Right? So in other words, it's the combination of the soul and the material energy, but the material energy that you're working with is a combination of itself. Right, so the field itself is a combination. So you can say the combination of the field, meaning the field itself has been combined in a particular way, and you add the knower of the field, the soul, to that. Right, but it's also, you could say, it's the combination of the field and the knower. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So it defines both. That's the nice thing in the Vedic things, is sometimes they have one definition, they can do two things. Mm. This is called, let me see, what they call it. Ditransitive, like that. It means that you have an intransitive verb, but you have a ditransitive. It means transitive and intransitive, and but something that generally they don't use so much is ditransitive. It does two things at once. So here the combination is indicating the combination of the field, and once it's combined, then the soul also being combined with that.
Is it that often in Sanskrit it can actually be understood on several levels?
Levels at once, yes. Yeah. No, that, see, that's the thing, is that when we're discussing these, is it's taking it for granted that once it's defined, that's how you're looking at it. Mm. Right? But then the difficulty comes is that we tend to just catch the word, and however we like to use the word or used to the word, then we try to interpret it according to that. But what it's trying to point out is that this word indicates this particular combination of understandings. So we take, when it's only this, then it's hard to understand. So you have to be able to deal with a few things at once. Is that? Yeah. Living beings are the souls of the selves who enjoy or suffer in this world, depending on their meritorious or non-meritorious past impressions, right? Which will be based on whether they're following or not the laws of God, right? Thus, according to Vaisheshika philosophy, the world is a moral stage on which the life and destiny of all individual beings is governed, not only by the physical laws of time and space, but also by the moral law of karma. In performance of present karma, individual is free and thus the creator of his own destiny. But the starting and ending point of the universe depends on the creative or destructive will of the Supreme Being, God. So now he's saying that you're free to do whatever you want. On one level you are, but still you're still governed by the modes of nature. Right? Like that. You know, so there's only so many opportunities you're being. You can only... In other words, you're free to work within with the framework that's already been established, mm-hmm. right? And how it'll function and everything. So, you know, it seems here that more elements being put on that freedom, right? Because why would that be there? Why would you want to overemphasize your freedom in free will? We'll say you have free will, but we don't emphasize it too much. But why here there'd be more emphasis? You understand? Mm-hmm. Means at the end, you're trying to be free.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Right? You know, does that make sense? So, because the whole idea is being free, that prayojan of being freed from mm-hmm. all this, so you boost this one up. But the point is then you're misapplying it in free will within the material, the combination of atoms. You should be applying it to appreciate position when all the atoms are disassembled.
And it also says earlier that there are moral and spiritual laws governing the combination,
yes.
So that would also apply as we go up.
Yes, it should always be there, but the point is if you follow the spiritual, then you free yourself from all this, and then you're out.
I don't know if I'm wrong, but I think we skipped for the purport.
No, you're right. Because sometimes it's hard to tell if the whole thing is one, because I don't always. Okay, Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, both material nature and the living entity, which were existing before the creation of the cosmos, are explained in this verse. Whatever is created is but a combination of the living entity and the material nature. There are many manifestations like trees, mountains, and hills which are not moving. And there are many existences which are moving, and all of them are but combinations of material nature and the superior nature, the living entity. Right? So there's so many combinations of material nature, but they're only there because it's a combination of that material nature and the living entity. Without the touch of the superior nature, the living entity, nothing can grow. So in other words, there will be no combination of the atoms unless the soul is involved. Right? The relationship between matter and nature is eternally going on. And this combination is affected by the Supreme Lord. Therefore, he's the controller of both the superior and inferior natures. The material nature is created by him, and the superior nature is placed in the material nature. And thus, all these activities and manifestations take place. It means you have your free will. It's his laws, so you have your free will to function within those laws. And then having done that, then the material nature then transforms into the various kinds of created situations or fields. The universal law, adrishta, of the process of creation and annihilation influences the individual cells to function or to be active in the direction of the creative will. Directed by this unknown force of adrishta, the soul makes contact with an atom of air. Thus, the primeval motion comes into being. That primeval activity of air creates dyads, triads, and all the rest of the gross physical manifestations of air elements. Means why the dyads they put a Y, the physical they put a Y. Why not in the triads they put a Y? Why no consistency there? Or turn them all the rest of them into I's. And all the rest of gross physical manifestations of air elements, Mahabhutas. In a similar manner, there arises motion in the atoms of fire, water, and earth, which then compose the gross elements of fire, water, and earth. In this way, the vast expansions of the physical world come into existence. So the living entity, under the laws that comes in contact with these atoms from air, therefore there's motion, right? Because air is movement. And then from that, but actually those are all governed by time. And then from there, all these different manifestations of things will be there. Does that make sense?
Maharaj?
Yes.
This text doesn't mention ether.
No, that's space.
Yeah. No, but it's
because that's there in the
five substances.
Right. Means, in other words, earth, water, fire, and air. Yeah. Those are the ones that you see. Then it has the other five substances: space, time, direction, mind, and self.
So space is ether.
Yes, space is ether. Right? So in other words, they basically say that there's nine elements for everything. But then within mind, you'll have the senses, the sense objects, like that. So that expands everything out again.
I'm curious about, what's this direction? I don't think I've come across that in Gita.
Direction is your ten directions.
Okay.
Because then means, in other words, space is there, but then you have to have direction. No, but why he makes a distinction? Because direction is automatically there. But then point, time is the activity, direction is in which where it would be applied. But that would be situated in space. But the reason you're doing that is because of the mind. And ultimately, therefore, because of the soul. The soul, he identifies himself with this, therefore the mind. The mind chooses in that to perform particular activities that are made up of earth, water, fire, and air. Right? So that will be in a particular direction in space. So that's how they all go together.
So much is a relationship. He recognizes that God, the law of God, are the source of the creation.
Yeah, well, so does Nyaya, but it just doesn't get as, it's not as developed. But Nyaya also accepts that there's a God who controls everything. He creates, he maintains. Because it's his potency that creates it, maintains it, destroys it. But because he's not getting down, his point is logic, not atoms. So he doesn't focus really on atoms. He just focuses on that, how you say, you're here, but you're not actually part of this. So by using logic, you can figure out that you're not any of this, and this way then free yourself from it. And so here he's taking is that, you know, it has that attractive element. You break it down to the atoms, then there's nothing to be interested in. Right? You know, so there's a little bit more of that kind of the personal, the relationship and everything in this. It's not just pure intelligence. Right? It's a touch more. So I guess that's how the development is. It gets more and more. Adrishta, because that goes up the Mimamsakas, they also Adrishta, something like that.
You don't meet it there. You don't see it becoming
Mimamsaka. Well, I mean, it's what they call God, I think. Just that he takes care of the law, that's all.
Yeah, in that sense, yeah.
The manager of the law, so he's called Adrishta or Adrishtya or something like that, or some kind of thing. So they only see God as much as he's managing these laws. So if I follow the laws, then I'll get good karma, I'll be happy. So God's only business is to take, I did the work, he's got to give the results. So they don't, they also acknowledge God, but they don't actually go beyond that.
Just the principle that governs.
Yeah, just the principle that governs. So it's, yeah, it's all, yes.
What's the idea about the demigods? Is it not their position?
To?
If you manage, you go to them for the fulfillment of something.
No, that's there, but still their power is coming from the Lord, because we know Indra changes, this one changes, so where does that office come from?
So they go to the directly to God?
It's not that they go to God, it's a matter of they recognize his position of organizing everything. It's his power. But they only focus on, if I do good work, I'll get good results.
And what's their lifestyle?
So that means they're basically what we're talking about with Chudamani. It means these, you know, smart Brahmins and all that. But they follow everything very nicely. You know, it's just like you say, okay, I put my money in the bank, there's this much percentage, so in this much time I'll get this and that. So all you worry about is okay, I have to take my money, I have to get it to the bank, I have to give it to the right people, I have to get acknowledged, documented, and this and that. You don't really worry that there's a bank, you know that there's a bank manager and he sees that it all gets done. But he's only managing your money. Yeah, you understand, but they don't get into, you know, what does the bank manager do and why it's like that and this and that, and why is there a bank in the first place? They don't care. All they care is that I take my money to the bank, I get interest. You know, so it's like that. I do good work, I enjoy. That's all. And, you know, and God manages it, so cool. Is that a sense? The difficulty is that these are all the ways in which they fall short of actual proper Vaishnava understanding. That's what's happening in all these. You know, they say it's the will of God, but why is God's will working in this way? Why is there a creation? So it's for the reformation of the soul. It's not for it's for the reformation of the soul to leave the material world, but what they don't understand is the reformation means you go back to the spiritual world, right? That part they don't catch. Right? Does that make sense? So they only see something up to a point. So that's the difficulty. It's just like, let's say, you could the example of the elephant and the blind men. You have six blind men, and they come and they bump into an elephant. So then after, when they're discussing, each one of them has a totally different idea what the elephant is, but they're studying the same elephant. But they overemphasize or overfocus on one particular part, so they end up with this different, seemingly different philosophy. But it's actually just an aspect of, in other words, if you took Vedanta and you only studied one part of it, you'd get these other philosophies. So that's what they're doing. You know. Oops. the... Okay. The Supreme Lord is endowed with perfect wisdom, detachment, and excellence, jnana, vairagya, and aishwarya. He releases the adrishta related to individual beings, which guides the individuals in their flow through the currents of life. I was just here the other day about this flow of the currents. Who is talking about that? And at the end of life, the process of disillusion and annihilation also depends on the will of God. He inspires the adrishta corresponding to the individuals or to the universe, and then a destructive motion in the atoms of the body and senses or in the cosmos starts vibrating. On account of this destructive motion, there arises the process of disjunction and disintegration of the body and senses or of the universe. Right? In other words, he's applying it both to the individual situation of the soul leaving one body, right, or the whole universe being destroyed. It's the same principle. Just there's a beginning of the vibrating of the atoms going apart, right? And so then the whatever is the physical form disappears, right? And then like that. So it can be just that disappears, another one comes up if it's during the time of creation or maintenance, but once you get to the final destruction of the universe, then everything will do that, right? And then again, it will be created. You know, so they're not so worried about all that. They're just worried about getting out of it.
During the dissolution, all these atoms merge into basically Mahavishnu. I mean,
from our understanding, yes, it means when he breathes in, they all go back. It means they all go back into the material energy.
Yeah.
And the material energy goes back into him.
Right.
And he breathes out again, all the material energy comes out, then he glances at it, it separates, and he puts the jivas there. Mm-hmm. And does the primary creation, the blueprint of how to work. Then, as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, you know, he does all that. Then Brahma manifests mm-hmm. all that. And then the jivas then are placed in their various bodies and situations, right? And so then that goes on until the destruction of the universe when Mahavishnu breathes in. So then all the bodies and forms will disintegrate. They'll go back into the Mahatattva. The jivas and all that will leave. Then the Mahatattva goes back into the Pradhan. The Pradhan goes back into the Lord.
All the matter that our bodies are composed of have been recycled since time immemorial.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Antique.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah. So it's been around for a while. Yeah. If you look at it like that, it's not as. Well, I mean, if you're into antiques, then it's great.
You can't recycle.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. Sustainable recycling. Right? You know, so. Compound things break down into simpler and simpler components, finally devolving into the state of triads and dyads. Now here, this dyads with an I. What happened? And ultimately into atoms. In this manner, the physical didn't change. Physical elements of earth, water, fire, and air, and the related sense organs are disintegrated. After the dissolution of the manifest universe, there remain the four kinds of atoms of earth, water, fire, and air, as well as the eternal substances of space, time, direction, mind, and soul, with their attendant meritorious and non-meritorious samskaras. Right, so then if there's a creation again, then they all come back again. Thus, according to the Vaisheshika system of philosophy, there is no creation or annihilation, but rather an orderly and morally systematized composition and decomposition of the compound. So in other words, they're not getting in, I guess, into the Mahavishnu and everything like that. They're just seeing is that, according to the laws, then they just nicely go together and nicely fall apart, right? All the consequences. Orderly and morally systematized composition and decomposition of compounds.
That's a nice sentence.
Yeah, very, very, very. Yeah, very clean.
Yes.
What's that sound like called this? They always use a word when something is very...
Sanitized?
Yes, sanitized. Yes, you could say very sanitized, but there's another one that's more that you generally...
Concise?
Concise? No, but it goes with that, meaning that... immaculate.
Oh.
You know, very nice. An individual self or soul is involved in the universe because of adrishta. The karma of each soul is its own earnings, deposited in the safe of the Supreme Being, which come back to the self with interest.
Okay. I mean, even your bad deeds have interest.
yeah, no, they do. You too. Yeah.
That's their theory, or we also accept that?
Yeah, no, the interest is there. I mean, you're going and doing some little dinky yagya, and then you end up for thousands of years on some heavenly planet. Now, that's profit. That's interest.
That sounds good, but...
Yeah, but then, you know, you throw a rock at, you know, the Vaishnavs, and then that compounds into, you know, thousands of years in hell, you know. Or, you know,
you don't pay off the debt soon.
Yeah. So then the Yamadutas, they sit there and throw rocks at you all day. You know? But so, in other words, this adrishta is the laws of the Lord, but it's being managed by the Lord. So therefore, when this all goes apart, then it all goes back to the Lord. So the only thing they're seeing going to the Lord and coming from the Lord is simply this, what do you call it? The karma, you know, because of the adrishta. They're not actually looking at the souls going back to the Lord, all energy going back to the Lord. So they're not taking it that personal. So the Lord, they're not actually coming up with a personal concept. Mm. Does that make sense? He has qualities, right? But somehow or another, there's not a personal concept. You just know it is there, you know, just like you know the government is there and they're doing something, but you don't really attribute the personal element, right? Does that make sense? Because that's all the farther you're interested, so that's all the farther you go.
Mm-hmm. In the beginning of karma, also they are not talking anything desire or why that happened.
No, because in one sense it doesn't actually matter. See, this is one of the ones where the devotees overemphasize something that actually has no importance. You know what I'm saying? It's not really important, you know, how and when you got here, other than the principle you got envious of the Lord. The devotees love to get into little detail and discuss this and that and come up with philosophies and, you know, yell and scream and fight and all this for years, you know. But it's actually totally not important. So it's just like this. See, they get overly emphasized on atoms. It's you know, they're there, but it's not, you don't have to get into that so much. You know, Bhagavatam mentions it and we hardly ever discuss it. But this is all they talk about. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that. It's not really that important. Does that make sense? But when you get into the point of the principle of personal, then we as a person are not so interested in the Lord as a person. That's why we're here. The more we're interested in Him as a person and bringing our life in line with Him as a person that's favorable for Him, then the more we get out of this entanglement. So that's the actual working thing. Now the technical mechanics of how those things work, that's not so important. Does that make sense? You know, the person gets into his car and he knows if he gets in the car, sits in the driver's seat, turns it on, you know, and pushes the pedals and moves the little wheel in front of him properly, then he gets from point A to point B. Now, how the cylinders are working and this and that and the oil, you know, filters and the radio, doesn't know at all. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter. All they know is that this is how much you need to drive it. Mm-hmm. So the point is you have this unlimited facts and figures of the Lord, His creation. So depending upon what you want to do, you get absorbed in those facts and figures. So for us, it's develop our relationship with God. So those technical points, that's what we're interested in. And other technical points aren't so important.
So if they go into like law of karma, why it started, then they can get back to like, because we wanted to be separate from the law.
But then you have to know that the Lord's a person.
Yes.
They don't know that.
They say he's a safe. He's a safe.
Yeah, basically he's a safe. Everything goes back to him. Do you understand the idea? Let's say you go and visit your home. Okay? Everybody in your family is like a great realized sage? No. What about your neighbors? What about the rest of your community? What about the next community? No. So do you worry about why they're not understanding these things? Or do you worry about what is the actual understanding? You understand? So you don't worry why the Vaisheshikas don't see that. They just don't. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, you know, the standard parent, you know, in India is that get educated, be successful, make money, get married, have lots of children and grandchildren, and life's perfect, right? Mm-hmm. Did I leave anything out? No? Okay. Yes, not there, but I'm just saying, you know, you understand? So, but why? Why is that important? Nobody thinks about it. It's just accepted. Why? Because of the modes of nature. So here is a, you know, great personality that's empowered to write and document this particular angle of vision. It's just, it's in a pure state. It means pure, meaning it's not mixed with other elements of philosophy other than its natural progression, and it's taken to the furthest degree that you can go with this perspective, right? And so with that perspective, then they they try to find what's their perfection, who they are, their perfection, and all this and that. But they're only seeing this much. Because if they saw the whole thing, they'd be devotees. You understand? So all these schools don't see God as Bhagavan. None of them. Right? So, generally speaking, here we're talking about he is Brahman. Right? But Saguna Brahman. Not Nirguna, right? That's actually Buddhism. It's not Vedic. So we can see from here is Vedic means, Brahman means Saguna, with qualities. So only the Buddhistic concept is Nirguna. There's nothing. And so Shankara then established that to convert the Buddhists back to the Vedic culture. Right? Because otherwise you're going to explain how you're going to go from a Nirguna Brahman to a Saguna Brahman. That'll freak him out. So he just leaves it at Nirguna. But instead of calling it void, he just calls it Brahman. You know, instead of being nothing, it's the light. You know, okay, so you can kind of, light's kind of cool. Okay, so you can go from that. You could make that step. Does that make sense? So, the point is they don't see this.
So these who are following this, maybe we can make them understand the existence of God by...
Yes, by taking is, in other words, you ask where. So yes. Therefore, where is this? Why would that desire be there? What's the actual purpose? So that's, yes, that's how you do. You just, in other words, by that process of inquiry, then you just take it further and further, and then establish all these things. Yeah. The idea is that people will come up with these different kinds of stuff, not necessarily so developed,
mm-hmm.
but you know, then you just take it back to its original form. So in other words, we'll see it always in relationship to the Supreme Lord. Right? But they see the connection to the Lord, but not in the way that it's a positive thing. It's just the fact. The positive for them is getting out of the material world. Does that make sense?
Interesting. The positive is the removal of something.
But that's why it's understood that it's material. Right? It's not actually a transcendental philosophy, because otherwise it would be adding in the actual positive. But all of them are the removal of the negative. Okay. Okay, so then, yeah. Yeah, so we'd have to end here. Because now we get, the next point is then, what's the common and differences between the Nyaya and Vaisheshika?
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaura ki.
Jai. 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 Jai.